When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kyle Meredith, host of the Kyle Meredith With podcast, presented by WFPK at WFPK.org and the Consequence Podcast Network. It's a series that puts the spotlight on iconic musicians and actors, inviting them to drop by and talk about their latest projects, whether it's albums, TV shows, films, or beyond.
I'm going to say something I don't want to say. Here it goes. Without Spinal Tap, there is no Tenacious D.
Whoa. Man.
We get great stories and the biggest scoops from people like Garbage's Shirley Manson, the 1975's Matty Healy, Jack Black and Kyle Gass of Tenacious D, Maya Hawke, Kiefer Sutherland, and everyone in between. New episodes arrive every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can find Kyle Meredith With on the Consequence Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into episode 81 of the Modern Drummer Podcast with Mike and Mike. My name is Mike Johnston from mikeslessons.com, and my co-host who will be joining me shortly is Mr. Mike Dawson, managing editor of Modern Drummer Magazine. After Mike and I get all caught up, we will talk a little bit about stage fright, what it is, and how we deal with it. Our featured artist this time is Mr. Dave Weckl. In our gear review section, we'll be checking out the D-Drum Max Kit. We'll get to a bunch of your listener questions, and as always, we'll give you our picks of the week. So let's get started.
What?
Oh, so how does that sound on your end?
We sound like we're 5-year-olds who can't keep a beat. You know,
that was a
speaking of which, I had because I started teaching some kids, some beginners, and a good friend of mine, that's like how he makes his living, is teaching beginners. So he just happened to come out to one of my gigs, and we were just talking, and he was asking me how it was going. I'm like, it's going fine, you know, but I feel like there's just certain things that I'm having to really – you know, keep harping on and like time and stuff. He's like, you know what, Mike, here's a little lesson for you. I've been doing this for a lot of years. From age 5 to 13, their time always sucks. Like they're not going to be good at it. You're going to have to just let go of it. And then one day they're going to walk in and they can play in time. Like it just have to, you have to let it go. I'm like, I don't know, man. That's the only thing that matters to me. It's the only thing I practice. But
yeah, it's tough, man. I mean, that's, the toughest thing in private lessons is taking yourself out of the equation when they're kids.
Yeah.
You know, I don't get to impose my artistic vision for them when they're kids. It's like, man, my job is to get you to fall in love with this instrument. Because once you fall in love with it, you and I both know, I would say probably from 12 until my late 30s, it's never felt like practice when I practice. It's the most fun I have all day.
Yeah, I can agree.
Even in the worst moments of practice. Yeah. But up to 12, it was like my mom going like, you need to practice your drums. And it's like, no, I'll play them, but I'm not practicing those stupid things. And then time, it's like you have no concept of time. So how can you be good at something you don't have the concept of?
Yeah, like I'm going to learn what fractions are, and I'm trying to teach you subdivisions. And
right.
Like what is a subdivision? I don't even know what that word means.
You know, and I'm sitting there at like the whatever Russ McKinnon clinic when I was 11, and he's going, you know, time is about the space between the notes. If you can perfect the space in between every note, you'll have great time. And I'm like, what? Why would you want any space between the notes? Go faster, close the gaps. You know, so it's like you're just not in the right mindset to handle that. So back off the kids, funny. Dawson.
No, back I mean, off the kids. I don't beat them up. But it's just one of those things in the back of my head. Like, am I failing as a teacher not having them practice with a metronome? But it's,
you know,
I'm okay with it.
There's a little bit of a fear, and this is a real thing, especially when you're teaching students. One of the fears that creeps in is what happens when this student goes to their next teacher?
Yeah.
Because their next teacher is going to be like, wait, your teacher never taught you about time? And then you have to call that teacher and be like, hey, he was 7 when I had him. He's 32 now. Okay?
Yeah.
Calm down. Like, and so, yeah, I mean, I remember as a private teacher, I was like, oh, you're going to go take lessons with him? Okay, let me give you some sheets to put in the front of your folder. Okay, tell him you were working on this. Don't let him know what we really did the whole time. Oh, that's awesome. Man, how are you, buddy?
I am frazzled. It's been a long week. It's never any week. So last week I did like a string of 5 shows in a row and then a rehearsal. Wow. So no weekend for me. I literally touched down at Newark Airport at 6:30 on Saturday and had to be at a gig by 8:45 after playing like 3 shows in a row on the West Coast. So, you know, I was a little frazzled, but I had reminded myself of the way that you can get like better at playing gigs is by playing gigs.
Right.
Like that, like road chops that you develop that.
Yes.
You can't manufacture absolutely. Them in the practice room. And it's so frustrating and it's so fleeting. Like by the end of those 6 days, I was like, man, I can do no wrong. Like everything is just firing like perfectly in my brain. I'm focused. I was exhausted, but the gig still went great. And it was just like that is that's the juice that I crave. Like, how do I do that? How do I manufacture that in the practice room?
Yeah, man.
But you can't.
Our label,
you really can't.
No, our label actually, so let's say we would get a big tour with a Rage Against the Machine type band that was going to be all massive shows. Our label would always put us out on a 2-week club date tour, gigs every night, leading into the first opening show of whatever major act we're on, because they couldn't allow us to eventually get our road chops on.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, hey, this band will probably only come to the side of the stage on your first night ever because they want to see who's opening for them. And after that, they're never going to see you again.
Yeah.
And this is your only chance to impress them. And so, yeah, it's a real thing for sure. And once you're in that zone and you're like, I don't even play drums. The drums play me.
Yeah,
I'm just,
it just happens.
You become Billy Corgan. You're like, I'm the auteur of the information as it flows, you know, and you just become like such a hippie. But it's just the way it is, man. And it's such an effortless thing.
Yeah. And I don't think there's any way to practice it. Your band can rehearse 8 hours a day. You have to just play shows and then it's just something happens. Yeah. But like I said, it's so fleeting. Like today, I feel like it's all gone. Like it's not there. I'm back to hating myself. And you're like, oh, man. Before, it was just like autopilot. I felt like James Brown where he steps on stage and just his body just starts moving.
You know? Yeah. No, it's – well, and the other thing is the people that see you on your 3rd or 4th show, to them, it's their first show. So they just assume, oh, he's always like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's just Mike Dawson. That's why he's that modern drummer. He just steps on stage and he's the man. Well, I'm glad you got to. Where were you on the West Coast?
Where did I play? San Diego and then Vegas for a couple of days.
Oh, okay. Cool, man. It was
fun.
Very cool.
It was fun. And then I flew back and did a couple gigs here locally with a guest guitarist who was out of town, a great guitarist. But so it was like this, the whole week was kind of high pressure. You know, we flew in, played a show that night with, you know, no real prep, and then drove to Vegas and played a couple. You know, big rooms, and then I flew back and had no rehearsal with this guy and had no sleep. I mean, I literally stayed up until 5 in Vegas, got on the plane.
Wow.
I guess slept. I don't know. I just kind of arrived in Newark.
Just in and out. Yeah.
And then went straight to the gig, and I was literally like, my vision was blurred by the time I got to the gig.
Wow.
But it just turned on. As soon as I sat behind the kid, I was like, oh, here we are. Let's go.
This is what I do.
This is what I do.
I'm a professional musician. That's
fun.
Awesome, man.
How was your
Sweetwater while you were doing that, I was playing drum solos at 7 a.m. in front of a crowd. Oh, man, that's tough. That is tough.
Did you start with like 60 BPM? Where'd you go?
Yeah. Well, luckily, this was for Meinl, so it was a cymbal. We were just showing off the 3 lines from beginning to medium to pro. So we showed off the HCS line, which honestly, I don't know if you've ever reviewed them, but I think Paiste does a similar thing where they make so many cool cymbals in their most affordable package now.
Yeah.
That like you get splashes and trash crashes and, you know, stacks. And I'm like, because I don't know if you saw the picture I put on Instagram, but it had all the HCS on my kit from Sweetwater. And it's a massive Portnoy setup. And then while we're doing the speech, the guy that's, you know, doing the thing, like I'm behind the kit. And then there's a Meinl rep that's talking to the crowd. And he's like, all right, this whole kit that we've got on Mike's kit retails for $349. And I was like, wait, what? I could be full Portnoy for $349. This is awesome.
That's crazy. I remember paying like $125 for one sort of crappy crash.
For like a B8 Pro or something. Yeah, no, I mean, this stuff isn't even bronze. It's rolled brass.
Wow.
Or stamped brass. But it actually sounded really good. And one thing I noticed is that when you're going for nasty sounds like a trash splash or a trash china or a stacker, the cheaper the metal is, the better those things sound.
Yeah, I agree.
You don't need B20 bronze for a china. So anyway, I had a blast doing that. And one of the coolest things is one of my favorite people in the entire drum industry, John Palmer, who was he was the head of product development at Gretsch for years. Mm-hmm. And so anything new that came out with Gretsch, he was behind it. And him and I became very close while I was at Gretsch. He's now at Tama, and Tama was putting on a similar thing at Sweetwater. So I got to see him, got to play some Tama kits, got to have him be like, you know, you sound pretty good on that Star Classic. I'm like, stop it. I'm not going anywhere.
I heard you've been buying some drums, you know.
Yeah, hey, I mean, if you're shopping, we've got. But I was like, dude, your kits, I played a, they had like my sizes 20, 12, 14 in a Tama Star Classic. And the one thing that I will say about Tama that blows me away, and this is for everyone out there that's looking for an amazing, and maybe you can attest to this too, but an amazing affordable snare drum, that SLP line is incredible, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty impressive and really extensive.
It is, to me, the new Black Panther, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they got everything in that line.
Yeah, I played a pine snare drum, I think, or something where I was like, what? And it was amazing. And then they had an aluminum one. Anyways, that's one thing that I'm always recommending to my students. I mean, the Brooklyns are affordable and they sound fantastic, but that SLP line has so much variety in it. So,
and some of them are like $100, like the smaller, like 12.
Oh, they're super affordable. Yeah, they're really affordable. So yeah, Sweetwater was great. I had a good time doing that, and it's just always inspiring to be around that company. I had my second rehearsal last night with my new project.
Sweet.
I don't know if I've ever had this much fun playing drums in my life.
Really?
Like, I really
with
mean
another
it. Like,
human being?
I know. That's the craziest part. And what I realize is it comes down to writing. This is my ninth time trying to date since my last band broke up. And every one of those dates have been like, you're cool for a night, but we're not. This isn't going to be long term because you can't write. So the noodling that I do with people and the showing off stuff is always fun, but it's like, but there's no songs here. And this kid Dean that I'm playing with, he just writes stuff that I like. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got a little hint of, it's like 90s rock fusion.
Hey,
so it's got like the tone that I dig that's from my past, and then we get to do it in odd time signatures. So I'm having a blast with that. And then I got, because that 13 ANF was so awesome, I got the 14x5.5. I think I sent you a picture of that, but I'm playing that now.
Oh, man.
And, yeesh, that's trouble right there. That is trouble, I tell you what. So loving the 14x5.5 raw brass. And, other than that, man, everything's good. Just getting it ready for camps.
Wow, coming up already on that.
Yeah, so I'm finishing up the curriculum, which I'm really... This is the first time I think I'm going to make the curriculum into an actual book for sale because I'm really proud of it as a book.
Nice.
I think I'm actually going to get rid of my linear drumming book, get rid of my Groove Freedom book, and then what this four-stage practice method book and the camp book is it'll be a little bit more like Kim Plainfield's book. It'll be like a best of. So it'll be the four-stage practice method book. Stage one and stage two will be what they are: exercises in non-creativity and exercises in creativity. And then stage three, which is main focus, that will be the Kim Plainfield side, where it's like, well, you don't need 140 pages of Groove Freedom. Here are my favorite 10, the ones that are just at the core. And I want to eliminate every single note of fluff that I've ever written. I want every note that's there to be like, this is awesome. If you do this right, it is incredible, you know? Because you and I have gone through books where it's like, all right, you're now into mathematical permutations of the same idea just to fill up pages. But really only number two and number six on this page are awesome.
Right.
Yeah. So, and so I want to get to that. And with Kim Plainfield's book, I kind of felt like, dude, you go into Afro-Cuban 6-8, his chapter on that, and there's only two pages of it, but each one is like, oh, that's money. So I'm really, I don't know if you can hear it, but I'm in kind of a juiced up phase right now.
I think you took all my energy, brother.
Well, that's 42 minutes of our podcast. All right.
I'm in a coffee-up phase right now.
Oh, Man, well, hey, however we get there is how we get there. And you and I will balance each other out. Next time I'm just like, you know what? I don't think I've ever sucked at anything as much as I suck at the drums. That's when you'll be like, dude, I rip. I'll be like, great, good for you. All right, let's talk a little bit about education. Let's get into something that we don't talk about enough, but I think we all deal with, and that is the subject of stage fright.
Yes.
What is stage fright? How do we deal with it? And I think we all go through it in very different ways. And the reason that we haven't solved stage fright is because we're all human beings and we all deal with it in different ways. And I think the other thing is I don't think a lot of people know how to identify their stage fright. They don't know what it is. They just know they're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
They're not happy. And whatever they just put their toe into, they don't want to dip their whole foot in mm-hmm. there. And stage fright is a weird thing. It shows up. I can tell you this right off the bat. I've never once had stage fright on stage. That's the only place it doesn't happen. It's
the moments
it's the
leading
6 months
up.
Yeah. leading up yeah. to it. Yep. I'm petrified. I go into full depression. But once I'm there, it's like I know the cure for it. We can talk about it later. But, yeah, I've never had stage fright on stage. That would suck. If I got on stage and started kind of shaking a little bit, oh, God. Even that's making me frightful now. So what about you? I mean, I'm assuming on just a gig, a regular old gig, you probably don't have a lot of stage fright, do you?
No, not anymore. I mean, I think it's one of those issues where the more experience and the more you put yourself in uncomfortable situations, the more you're prepared for it. I kind of think stage fright is you get anxiety from the unknown. Like what could happen right. that would totally mm-hmm. ruin this experience. And you know, 20 some years into playing gigs and some of the nastiest clubs in the country, I think I've had every experience just about that could go wrong. Right. I've had bass drum beaters fly out. I've had drum heads break. I've had,
yeah.
you know, I've had monitors
drop sticks.
Monitors go out. Yeah. I've had drunk bandmates. I mean, bandmates. You know, all the things that you could think could ruin it. But so lately, not really. I kind of relish it a little bit. But
yeah, it's just fun.
I've certainly been like jitters, and usually it's just excitement. I kind of chalk it up for just I'm excited to play now rather than I'm scared.
And that
to play.
Seems like it's a mental switch that you have to flip. Is I would assume on a medical level that, and on a biological level, that excitement and nervousness are very similar.
Yeah.
As far as what's going on in your stomach and the acids and
yeah, exactly.
And it's like you're the one that has to tell you like, oh wow, look how excited I am.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you're scared out of your mind, but whatever.
It's just but it's just words to describe that emotional response. I mean, it's either right. positive or negative. And I think just switching it to the positive usually helps. I mean, I don't get paralyzed by fear very much anymore. I mean, going through music school and college and where you had to do a jury performance for the entire percussion staff and, you know, every semester, those were scary because that was right. like my teachers and my peers and the guys I looked up to were going to be analyzing me play the exact same piece that they're playing. And that was pretty terrifying. There were definitely a few of those when I'd like called in sick mentally, like, yeah, you yeah. know, like this is
a little sweaty palm. This ain't gonna like, happen. Oh. But we just surpassed the place that the sweat is helping with the grip. And yeah. Now I'm actually slipping.
But it was always non-drum set stuff. When we got to the drum set section, I'm like, ah, you know, I'm back home. It was like marimba or timpani concertos right. and yeah. stuff that I literally had probably practiced 1/100th of the amount of time that I'd practiced drum set.
And probably practiced it in a very different mental space, too, because you're just getting it to get it out of the way
yeah.
rather than doing it because you love it.
Not really passionate about it. Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What about, let's say Modern Drummer brings back the MD Fest. It's mm-hmm. Modern Drummer Festival 2020. And Mike Dawson has to do two things. You got to come out and welcome the crowd with a little, like, hey, Mike, we need you to go out there and fill 5 minutes while Virgil Donati gets ready.
Yeah.
So you're going to give a speech to the crowd.
Yeah.
And then after Virgil, we just need you to play a quick 5-minute solo to get us to the next person. Which one of those would make you more nervous?
When I was in my teens and 20s, I would say the speaking part would have been the worst.
Okay.
But Now that doesn't scare me at all. I feel completely comfortable awesome. On a stage with a microphone. But it's the opposite. I mean, I practiced drum solos when I was a teenager, and I was just so young and arrogant that I didn't really care. You know, like,
yeah,
I felt
yeah,
like, sure, I can play right after Virgil. I actually did have right. to play right after Virgil at a
what?
At a it might have been a drum off or Mars Music drum
okay.
contest. He was like the featured guy, so I had to play like right after him.
And were you a contestant?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
It was weird because he was backstage just warming up for like 5 hours. Just
yeah,
with a no, he's double pedal and a pad and a practice pad and like really not talking to anyone. And just I was like, whoa, this guy's like he's going out there to kill somebody. Like he's not messing yeah. around.
It's a whole different level of commitment to the instrument that what Virgil and Thomas and, you know, Marco, what those guys do.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. But
yes, but
well, I think
I think today I would go out and just play something that's comfortable. I wouldn't feel like I'd have to play a solo that would match Virgil. Right. I would probably just play some beats and things that I know that I can sure. execute no matter what in any situation. I wouldn't be like, all of sure. a sudden, let me, this is what I did actually done wrong in contests before, no preparation. Let me just feel inspired in the moment and see what happens.
yeah.
And I get out there good luck, and like the lights are on and the fog machine is on and I'm playing on like a fusion kit, but I'm a jazz drummer. I'm like,
right.
Inspiration, zero. I'm going to go home right
zero.
Now.
Zero. yeah. But at least the phone's ringing. Let me see if I can grab some tempo off of that thing. yeah. Well, I think when it comes to stage fright, the one thing that takes it away from me is preparation.
Mm-hmm.
Even though all the stage fright I have is, let's say, like right now I'm going to England next week to do a clinic on March 4th. So right now I'm nervous about it, and that's forcing me to practice. Once I'm on that flight to England, there's a part of me that knows you couldn't have done anything more. Now, that stage fright will continue through the flight, through setup, through everything, if I didn't do everything I could to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
So I know in my past history, just like you said, like if I just say, well, I'm going to feel inspired, I'll actually be nervous all the way up to the minute that I'm playing. It'll go bad. I'll hate myself in the hotel.
Yeah.
But if I put in everything I can with preparation and everything, then on the flight over, it's like, dude, I couldn't have practiced anymore. I literally ran out of hours every day. So my thought is when you see me in clinic, you're getting a snapshot of where I currently am today in my drumming, and I will be better tomorrow. So yeah. This is what it is, and it's not perfect, and it's never going to be perfect. But the preparation is the key. And the good thing about preparation is you can control it.
Yeah,
you can totally. Say, all right, I would love to hang out with you guys tonight, but I've got this thing coming up in England. I have to put in the hours. Otherwise, I'm going to hate myself. Now, if I prepare and I practice my butt off and I go to England and the drumming is terrible, I really can deal with it. It doesn't bother me anymore because I know I put in the hours. It's only when I don't prepare is when I really beat myself up.
Yeah, you're always going to have bad days. That's definitely
– yeah.
never factor just, that out. I mean, it's
– yeah.
I mean, there's an article in the – what issue is this? The March issue. We're still talking about that by Mark Shulman, who's – I mean, he's been a journeyman touring guy forever, like Cher and Foreigner and Pink for a long time. So he – the whole point of his article is about conquering stage fright. And right. he breaks it down into three things, which I think is – there's one preceding your preparation, and it's clarity to know what you need to prepare. That's the thing that I think,
yep.
like if you're like, you got to go out and like, if you said, I'm going to play the Modern Drummer Festival tomorrow, all right, what am I going to prepare? Am I going to all of a sudden whip out my double pedal, you know, which I haven't touched in 12 years?
Yeah.
No, I'm going to focus. I need to focus on what is it that I can actually do or what is important for that
what is important
performance.
And also, what are you trying to say? I mean, we are artists, so it's like, what are you trying to get across? You know, if you think about Chad Smith's Modern Drummer performance, he could have gotten across, by the way, I'm awesome at funk beats.
Yeah.
I'm Chad Smith. I play in the Red Hot Chili Peppers. He clearly was trying to make a statement, right?
Yeah.
He played, 4 minutes with no fills, no nothing. Yep.
And it might have been the most memorable 4 minutes on that entire show, honestly.
It's the only thing I remember. Yeah. I don't remember who else was on it. You know, I remember that at some point, didn't he bring out Ian Pace?
Yeah, they kind of split the show, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, so his preparation was, you know, like to your point, it was before the preparation that he decided, time matters, groove matters. I'm sick of all this stuff I'm seeing online. Because, I mean, that came out right at the beginning of the YouTube explosion for drummers.
Yeah, the chops galore,
Exactly. And he made a very specific point, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
So I totally agree. I think you have to have the clarity to know what you're preparing, why are you doing this, and what are you trying to get across before you do it.
Yeah.
But to really conquer stage fright, it's preparation. When you get on stage with your band and you guys know that you skipped 3 out of your 5 practices, you're going to be nervous. Because now you're just hoping, you're rolling the dice, hoping it works. Yeah. But if you prepare, it's like, all right, man, you just change it to like, I can't wait to share this with everybody, you know?
I think the other side of it is, which was something I also reminded myself over the weekend. I was reading, there's a percussionist in New York, Rob Knopper. He's in the, he's in the Metropolitan Orchestra, New York Met.
Wow.
So he's a world-class percussionist. And he started a blog where he's sharing just little tips about whatever, how to tune your snare drum, how to do whatever. He had one on, I think the whole premise of his blog is about auditioning, how to do well in auditions for orchestras.
Okay.
But he has one on the fear factor, how to play snare drum quietly while your hands are shaking, basically, which was his premise of stage fright. How do you conquer stage fright? And he had some pretty awesome ideas that I never would have thought of. Like his premise, which is kind of what I was mentioning earlier, was you can't just prepare in the perfect, clean, comfortable environment. You can't practice alone in your perfectly tuned studio with,
right,
you know, have your hour to have lunch and then go practice. He's like, you got to put yourself in really uncomfortable situations. So when you go into the audition, which is really, really uncomfortable, you're prepared. Your body can handle it. So he does stuff like the easy stuff is to have a different person listen to him play every day, like critique his playing every day.
Yeah.
which is easy to do. Just get your friends and family to come over and play for them and make sure they sit right in front of you and you can see them and they're looking right at you and they're making you, you know, uncomfortable. That's one. That's a pretty obvious one. He carries his snare drum. So he goes outside the room and he carries his snare drum into the room and plays. So he doesn't have any.
Just like, so a mock audition.
Yeah, so he has no chance to like get comfortable or whatever. Or he'll set his sticks down on the ground before every time he plays. So he has to get himself out of his like comfort set zone.
Wow.
Then he talks about doing some crazy stuff like putting his hands in ice water for a couple minutes and then playing.
Wow, he's really going in.
Yeah, or getting up super early and playing it. Or staying up all night and then playing. Like whatever you can do to put the light, you know, extremely hot lights on. Make it really cold.
Wow, that's really cool.
Stuff that, whatever it's going to do, it's going to shake you out of that, like, you know, this play outside in a crowd of people. That's another one he says. So I thought it was really cool. And I've kind of been doing things every day of just like setting up loops that don't have a metronome and just.
I saw that. That was great.
Like, just make it work and don't, you know, just go for it. Do 1 minute, stop, and then program another loop and play with it. So I think that's another way to kind of tackle it and film it and post it. That's another technique, I think, that's really effective. You know, record yourself and put it online so people can see
it. Man, this is a great website. I'm going through it right now, and I love how it's set up very different. He's got Audition Hacker and Percussion Hacker, and he's got blog, he's got courses. This is really well done, man.
He's world class. I mean, he's a symphonic percussionist, so there's no drum set angle, but most of the concepts can be applied to what
especially
we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, all the mental stuff is just, it's just life.
Yeah.
You know, whether you have sticks or a bowling ball, it's just life.
Exactly. So he, you know, it's definitely worth checking. I think it's just robknopper.com.
Yep. Robknopper.com, and then you can go /blog but if you go there right when you hit Audition Hacker, a little drop down menu will show up, and then just click on the blog and you're set.
Yeah. So put
that's
yourself
really cool,
in
man.
Really uncomfortable situations, and then that simulates that anxiety, but it never quite
and that's
gets
still,
you there. Never quite.
No, but it still comes down, that's still preparation.
Yeah.
The more you prepare, like every time I prepare, it's knocking off, like if I start at 100% of stage fright, then every time I prepare, it's like taking off a couple percentage points until all that's left is that little bit of rumbling in my stomach that's telling me, like, cool, something amazing is about to happen.
Yeah.
And instead of being petrified. So, all right, guys, well, put yourself in uncomfortable places. don't put yourself in uncomfortable positions.
Don't.
That's weird. This isn't Kama Sutra. I mean, what are we talking about here? talking about drumming. All right. We should probably talk about our featured artist.
Yes, indeed.
This is one of both of our favorite drummers of all time, Mr. Dave Weckl. So,
who I think our very first episode might have had him as the featured artist. 80 episodes.
Yeah. Jeez Louise, man. Yeah. You know what's really impressive is how the heck have we not repeated a pick of the week?
Yeah,
there's only so much stuff in the world, right?
We totally skipped them last week, though.
Yeah, we lucked out. Because if you would have hit me with a like, all right, Mike, give me your pick of the week, I'd be like, the microphone that I'm talking into? I would have had nothing for you. So, all right. So, Weckl, right off the bat, give me like one of your favorite all-time Weckl recordings or performances.
Okay, favorite. Because I have a few different categories of Weckl for
me. All right, what do you got?
My favorite, which I know was a pick of maybe when we talked about him originally, is the song Gotta Match off of the Chick Corea Electric Band debut. And by the way, the reason we're talking about him again is not because we just love him so much, but he's actually featured in the March issue because he just did a tour with the reunited original lineup of the Chick Corea
yes.
Electric Band. So that's what inspired us to bring him up again. But yeah, that track Gotta Match off of that debut record, I think it's the self-titled. It's insane. I mean, it sounds like what Benny Greb and Mark Juliana and Zach Danziger are doing today, but it was in, 1988 or 89 or whatever. It's insane. So that's my all-time favorite Dave Weckl track. And it's not – and they're kind of doing just jamming, going for it. So it's not like a lot of the really orchestrated compositions that band played, which are cool.
Right.
But I like to just hear them just go for it because they're all –
yeah.
Virtuosos. So they hear them just, all right, let's just play a fast sort of funky swinging thing and just go. And that's kind of what this tune is. So that's my favorite track. I also really love, what was the name of that second video series he did for Carl Fisher?
Yeah. The whole practice series thing that he did.
There's some performance.
He's on the yellow Yamaha.
The hip gig kit.
Yeah. Yep.
There's not enough of the performance clips in those videos, but the ones that there are, I think that's Dave at his finest, where it's kind of his return to acoustic drums, but before he got into using a lot of percussion and stuff, so he's just kind of going for it. That's another one that's really great.
Yeah, there's some of those songs that are on there are actually part of my favorite album. My favorite track would be from him... I'd probably say it's between The Chicken from Live and Very Plugged In. So Live and Very Plugged In is my favorite Dave Weckl band album.
Which I have not heard at all.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I don't even know that one.
Oh, no. This is the quintessential. Okay, so those songs, there's a whole album of that. From that video series. This album and those songs came out at the same time. So it's Dave Weckl Band Live and Very Plugged In. And it's Tom Kennedy on bass. And it is my favorite of all time.
Yeah, I don't have that one.
And it sounds great. And it's live, but it's like, you know, Dave's controlling the drums. So it is the Dave Weckl drum sound. Because one thing that I really like about Dave is that he sounds like that live.
Mm-hmm.
It's just incredible. So,
how would you describe his sound?
Clean.
Yeah.
But it's not stale, you know?
Because it has changed over the years. Because early on, it was a very wet, deep, you know, low sounding drum sound.
And there's like this overly perfect sound that Dave had in the past. And I would say Gavin Harrison has had it at times where it's just like, flawless drum sound.
Yeah.
And I can't, it's not my thing. It's too good. It's too perfect. And this was like, I don't know how to explain it, man. It's just, it's it for me. Every time I hear it, I'm like, I'm going to forgive the keyboards. I'm going to allow the fact that someone's got the keytar preset and I am just in because it is so good. And I mean, I love anything that when Dave and Tom Kennedy are playing together, it's pretty amazing. So, favorite track of all time would probably be The Chicken or Tiempo de Festival. That's the last track on the album. But that is, without a doubt, my favorite Weckl album. I could listen to it over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, well, you know, the one that was the most frustrating for me, Because right when I got into Dave Weckl was, well, actually it was Dave Weckl that inspired me to really get into straight ahead jazz. It was because there was like one straight ahead track on his first solo album. I think he does Softly as the Morning Sunrise. And for some reason that just hit me. Like that was out of that whole record of all this killing fusion stuff. They go and just play a standard. And I'm like, that sounds interesting. I want to do that.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So I started exploring, you know, straight ahead jazz more. And he was kind of my conduit. So, of course, the first thing I do is get the Chick Corea Acoustic Band album.
Thinking that you're buying a jazz album? Thinking
I'm buying, like, a real traditional, you know, and yeah. It's like, oh, it's got all these tunes. Like, my middle school big band has played Autumn Leaves and these songs. And
right.
Like, sure, this will be familiar. So I got that CD, and I'm like, it was like the music had beamed in from Jupiter. I'm like, what in the world are these? I don't hear a single melody. I don't hear a single downbeat, like.
There's no downbeat. There's no backbeat. There's like I can't jam to this because I don't know where the hell one is.
It was so frustrating for probably like 8 years. I'm like, there's no way they're playing Bessie's Blues. There's no way they're playing it. Right. I don't hear
I can't
one note
hear
of it. And Dave is being so smart. He's not ever hitting like a resolution. Everything is just
ever.
Off the one, off the one. I was like, you know what? Screw this.
That's so odd. You're like, all right, kind of blew up. Here we go. I gotta go back to the beginning. Yeah, Master Plan, that's the album I think you're talking about.
Yeah, the first one. Yeah,
1990 when that came out. And oof, man. It's, you know, the one thing I love about Dave is he was a bad dude back then. You know,
yeah.
He was a bad dude at 17. I mean, but I still, unlike some other drummers, I don't listen to the old stuff really as like their peak. I actually like Dave now. I like him a lot. I could listen to him whenever. And you know, the album that I was talking about, it's not that, I mean, I guess it's kind of old. It's like 14 years old now, but it's from 2003. But it came out in 2003, but he played that stuff all the way to like 2008 on tours and stuff. So it still seems kind of modern to me.
And that was the more open drum sound, right? He had the tighter snare.
Tighter snare, just brought the bongos over the hi-hat.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't even know that that's what was there. So I was like, what drum is that?
Yeah.
Does he have a six? I mean, that's higher than an eight. But yeah, I mean, he's so influential to so many people. And that's the thing is I love Dave Weckl as a drummer. I really do. And I mean, I've been a fan of his for as long as I can remember. But I also love seeing the Weckl-isms show up in some of my current favorite players as well.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, you know, it's. I would assume it's very similar to the way people feel about Tony Williams, where no matter what they hear some Tony and some Elvin in there.
Yeah.
And since I wasn't obsessed with those guys growing up, but I was obsessed with Dave, I can hear the Weckl-isms in other drummers right away. Where I'm like, you clearly loved Uncle Dave.
Yeah,
you had to have, you know. Or if you didn't, you don't even know where you got this from. But I'm telling you, that's where you got it from.
Someone else who got it from Dave. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, but I think he came out at a time that was, how do you stand out? Because when Dave really hit the scene as a solo fusion artist, Vinny's already there, and Vinny's already there with tons of credentials.
Yeah.
You have Will Kennedy with the Yellow Jackets. You have Steve Smith with Vital Information.
And Gad was still doing it.
Joel Rosenblatt with Spyro Gyra. Yeah. Like, the fusion scene was kind of heavy, and Dave became one of, you know, I mean, I think he's kind of up there in our top five of like, all right, celebrated drummers.
Oh, it's not absolutely. I mean, I didn't live through the Steve Gadd mania when everyone started playing like Steve Gadd, but I think Weckl has to be the next version of that. Like, everyone started playing like Weckl. I mean, you had to have small toms, and you had to play a lot of double stroke rolls. I mean,
drier cymbals.
Like, Vinny was, I think, maybe everyone's favorite drummer, but really hard to imitate, at least in the early
years. I was going to say, I don't know a lot of people that went gear-wise towards Vinny, because I don't even think they knew how to.
Yeah, I mean, his vocabulary was just so sophisticated and unusual and unpredictable, whereas Dave, it's kind of like if you get the gist of it, you can mimic it, and which is dangerous.
Right.
I mean, that's the same thing with Elvin and everyone else. You get the gist of it, you can kind of do it, but then you overlook the fact that Dave's phrasing is really sophisticated too, but he's using familiar patterns, I guess, is what makes it different.
It's a little more tangible.
Yeah.
But it's tangible until you sit down and try to play along to a Dave track, and you're like, God, this guy's a genius, man. I mean, he's up there with Buddy Rich as far as people can only handle it for so long, and then they have to turn negative on it to make themselves feel better. At some point, everybody goes, Buddy Rich sucks. And I'm like, oh, really? Okay. We'll see you in 5 years when you come back around to it again. And at some point, everybody goes like, ah, Dave Weckl sucks. I'm like, okay. Yeah. You'll be back in 3 years, and you'll tell me what a genius he is, because you can only handle it for so long.
He was always ahead of the curve, too. Like, I
for sure.
I always loved his electronic stuff that he would throw in. He'd always throw a track in or something that would be like, what the hell is he doing? He's like using triggers or pads or something. And he was in the forefront of that. Like, even with Chick Corea, I remember all the pictures of him with like giant racks of electronics and computers and stuff. I mean, that's one thing that we probably overlooked because it kind of fell out of favor. But he was always searching for the new stuff, new technology. What can he try? I think it's a song called Trigger Happy on his second album. It's like his drum solo track, but it's not a solo. It's him like controlling sequencers and triggers.
Really?
And, it's pretty neat. It's not like
that's awesome.
It's not like some of the other tracks where he's just crushing on the drums. It's more of a textural kind of interesting thing. But that was like, I think, 92. I mean, we're talking a long time ago, 25 years.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of solo records. I mean, I would say for me, out of his solo records, Master Plan was the first one. You know, that was like, I remember thinking, holy crap, a drummer has an album, you know.
Yeah.
Or to me, I think I bought the tape, then I bought the CD. And then I wasn't there for Synergy and Heads Up. And then when the Dave Weckl Band came out, with the album Multiplicity, that's when I really jumped back on. Mm. And I was like, okay, Multiplicity is like the Dave Weckl sound, the modern sound. But I think he's also, one thing that I've really liked is that he's always been upfront about his desire to evolve for his own drumming. You know, I mean, when he put it out there that he was working with Freddie Gruber, we were like, wait, Weckl has a teacher?
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand that. Like, and then he made a whole DVD series on the evolution and the evolution symbols and the evolution sticks. Yeah. And I thought it was like, wow, Dave Weckl, who's, you know, at the top of his game, it, you know, changed the way he holds his sticks. And I totally remember like 5 years ago thinking, wow, that's really cool that Tiger Woods is about to do the Weckl thing. He's going to go ahead and change everything. And I didn't know that he then would never be able to hit a white ball straight for the rest of his life. So it doesn't work out for everybody, but worked out for Wex.
Yeah, well, you know.
Like, man, even Tiger Woods got a new teacher. Man, love you, T.
Not so much. Yeah, I mean, funny because I really do love the early Weckl stuff when he's like hitting a little harder and digging in. I mean, I love that, but I have nothing but respect for what he did when he kind of transformed. It's a totally different experience to listen to him play back then, which it kind of felt like he was more aggressive, and now he's just like masterful, just effortless.
He's masterful, and I think the great thing is, I see him every time he comes to Yoshi's in Oakland, and he's not losing anything because when he changed the way he played, it allowed him to play that way for the rest of his life.
Yeah, right.
And so seeing him now, you know, with his gray goatee and his Einstein hair, it's like, yeah, he's still Weckl, man. He's still, you know, honestly, when he took who did I see him with last? Probably Mike Stern. But when he took his solo, I mean, I was like, it was bad how much drool was coming out of my face and how in it I was, and I'm gripping the table with my fingernails, and I'm like, it was just incredible. And it wasn't like, oh, I wish I could have seen him 10 years ago. It's like, this is awesome. So you might be able to hear my voice. I'm a slight Weckl fan, but I've tried really hard to never, I've never sat down and practiced a single Weckl-ism ever.
I did.
You know, did you really? I would say if anything, maybe that 5-stroke roll between the ride and the left hands on the hi-hat and you kind of five into the bell.
Yeah.
That shows up in my playing a little bit. And then I would say the one thing that I definitely stole from him, totally subconsciously, was a little 5-stroke roll on the hi-hats into a crash, but no bass drum on the crash.
Mm.
Just,
yeah,
you know, I do that all the time. And leave the bass drum out very purposely, and I think that's Weckl-ish. But I mean, I've never sat down and tried to learn one of his songs. So you had like your Weckl.
Oh yeah,
I mean, I'm not talking about the play along book that he put out. I did that. I did all the.
Yeah, I mean, I was into
garden wall stuff.
Yeah, I mean, luckily, which I'm sure I've mentioned before, I got the Dennis Chambers video. It was the first drum video I ever purchased. So that kind of set the tone for my drumming career in a certain way. And then I got into Weckl. So I'd never fully went Weckl because Dennis had a certain thing, a certain, you know, that DC kind of vibe that I really was like, that's what I want to do. A little more aggressive, a little more, you know, like funk influenced.
Yeah. Yep.
So I would still like totally obsess over those records, but I would kind of filter it through the heavier kind of Dennis Chambers filter. Which is funny because if a friend of mine who we were the same age and we both came up at the same time and always were playing in ensembles and stuff, he got the Weckl video first. So I got to him like literally start adopting some of Dave's like physical traits. He would like round his shoulders over and had his head kind of down a little bit. Like he just kind of looked like him when he played. I'm like, that's cool. I'm glad I didn't go that way because I kind of like Dennis's vibe more, a little bit more up,
okay,
you know, a little more powerful, shoulders back a little bit more. So had I done that first, I probably would have never come out of it alive. I'd still be playing my Weckl licks.
Well, I mean, one thing that I love is that when I talk to other professional drummers and we're doing, you know, festivals or clinics or camps together, I've never run into anybody that didn't have their Weckl time of their life, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Benny is a huge Weckl fan. And really, I mean, even when I get to see Benny go to dinner with Weckl and Gad or something, I'm like, man, like, if you're from the outside looking in, you don't, and you're kind of new to drums, maybe you think Benny's the big dog in that group, you know,
because
that's maybe it's all you know. But I know, like, man, my buddy is getting to hang out with some of his true heroes, you know, and that's really cool because he has a massive amount of respect for him.
Yeah.
So everyone, check out some Dave Weckl. Literally, you can just go to iTunes or YouTube or whatever and type in Dave Weckl. But I think Mike makes a great point. Some of the greatest stuff Dave ever did was outside his own band and outside of his solo records. So check out, it's just the Chick Corea Electric Band, right?
Yeah, but electric is spelled with a K in the middle instead of a C.
Watch it now. Watch it now.
It's electric.
Crafty,
it's
crafty.
80s electric.
Yeah, it is. So check that stuff out. And I mean, I've, you know, Dave's done amazing things too. I was working on a track for a while with Will Kennedy. Will was doing the tour and Dave did the album. And so we had a drumless track of it. And it was a Lee Ritenour album. And Dave did the album. And it was, the drumming was just incredible. So definitely check that stuff out. All right, everybody. Well, it is time to move into something beautiful, which is gear review. You get to hear stuff today.
Yeah, finally.
We get to hear a whole drum set this time.
Yeah, it's the D-Drum Max Series kit, which I got to review for the March issue. And what is this one made of? It's because the past couple of years, they've been messing with Alder in their drum shells. So I checked out one. I know we talked about it probably a year ago on the Reflex kit, which is all Adler or Alder? Adler? I don't know what it, what is the wood called? Alder?
Alder. Alder. Yeah.
I just saw it.
Alderwood.
I just saw a typo.
It's not Chris Adler
wood.
There's
literally a typo in the magazine. I'm looking at
it. Oh, you have it as Chris Adler wood.
Yeah.
Nice.
Way to go.
The Lamb of God wood.
Way to go, great. Mike. Good job.
Oh, wait. Did you write this?
Yeah, I wrote this.
Yeah.
Way to go, everybody. Congratulations.
All right. I got Alder a degree. Wood.
So, which I loved because it was like deeper and darker and really like controlled. So you didn't have to muffle the drums up at all. And for this kit, they're blending, I believe, maple. Yeah, maple with alder. Yep, I spelled it wrong. Man, that's gonna make me lose sleep tonight.
Yeah, I can tell, man. This is like you seriously came in on the wrong downbeat, man. You are like not happy with yourself right now. You guys can't see on Skype, but he's like really staring at this issue like, no, maybe my eyes are messed up. I'm still a little tired from gigging. Getting in
deep. Son of a... Okay, so anyway... It's a maple alder blend, which gives it a little bit more life, a livelier sound.
Okay.
And so it sounded like a great kit that you could use for anything. Definitely more of a contemporary kind of thing. I guess if you got a bop version, you could do, you know, a straight ahead jazz kind of sound. But it felt like a good rock, R&B, whatever, contemporary Christian, whatever you need, it just has like a clean, good sound. D-Drum is making some really good moves this past couple of years.
Well, and it seems that it's got the tube lug, so it looks hip. It looks like the badge is slightly different. Let me zoom in real quick. I guess it's not, but
it's a little different. It doesn't have the
a little different.
The lettering
is
a little bit smaller, and they put some sticks on it, I think, to make it.
Yeah,
you know, it's not just D-Drum across the side.
So where do you see, I mean, just in all honesty, where do you see D-Drum fitting into the pantheon of drum companies? I mean, are they pushing forward? Because they exploded, you know, what, 10 years ago when they came out with, like, hey, you can have all these custom finishes for under a grand. I mean, because even everything you just said about this kit, you know, a three-piece kit is still only $1,000. So, you know, it's still pretty affordable. Yeah. I mean, it seems like they're not going away anytime soon, so...
No, it seems like they're kind of refocusing and getting back into, you know, putting out stuff that will last a career rather than 6 months, you know, like...
Cool.
I think when they first kind of came on the scene making acoustic drums, they were one of the first to do the super deep bass drums and kind of jumped...
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, they were part of that whole... That was the thing, is like, how do I get Travis Barker's Orange County kit when I can't afford that? Yeah. And D-Drum said, well, we could do it for under $1,000.
And it worked.
Well, absolutely. But to do it for under $1,000, something's got to give at some point.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but yeah, I remember people like crazy. Everyone was getting their 13x7 D-Drum snare drum,
right.
You know, for $150 at wherever. So yeah, I mean, just seeing that they're still putting out quality stuff or constantly trying to push forward is really cool.
Yeah, and they're refining, and then they're always putting out something. I mean, I think they've hit on something special with this not Adler wood, this Alder wood. You know, it gives them something unique, and it's kind of like, it's like gig ready. You know, you just kind of show up and the drums sound good. You don't need to, your sound guy's not going to be complaining about your floor tom ringing for 8 days. It just kind of has the right amount of sustain. You hit it, it sounds good and open, and then it dies out. Gotcha. So then they start mixing in other woods with it, and it just adds that other element. The maple brings it, just gives it a little bit more of a bigger sound, a longer, you know, a little bit brighter. But if they start mixing it with other woods, it's gonna bring in a whole new palette that's still gonna retain that kind of focused, you know, like, you don't need to tape up your drums to, you know, to keep it under control.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people want something where you say, okay, if I'm going to spend this kind of money, I don't want to have to then tape everything up and muffle it down. It's like, I just want it to do its job, you know? And that comes down to the material and the way they treat the material. And so, So what heads did you have on this? Just because we're about to hear it, what do you have on there? Just what it came with? Are they clear? Are they coated?
It was, single-plied? If I recall, it was clear double-ply batters, clear single-ply resonance. It was, I believe, a clear EMAD on the kick drum. The snare drum wasn't part of the kit, but that was also a pretty cool, like, I can't remember what it was, but it's a brass kind of vintage style Black Beauty-ish drum. So, and I didn't do my typical, like, here's high, here's medium, here's low with this kit, because they just sounded really nice in the medium low, and I just liked it. That's the sound. That's what people are going to go for with this kit. And talking about the price, the shell pack, which was an 8x12, a 14x16, and an 18x22-inch bass drum, $999.
Yeah.
I mean, that's right in the range of, like, guys who just need a kit they can go out and play gigs with. It's going to sound good. You could record on it if you needed to. I think it'll last. I mean, that's the one thing that I can't test is durability with this stuff. I really can't, like, Consumer Reports get robots to start shaking the hardware for 8 million repetitions. But I think it's built to last. I didn't feel any shortcomings with the hardware or anything like that.
Cool, man. Awesome. Well, let's give it a listen.
Listener question time, I guess. Oh, you know what? We have to remember. I'm gonna do this on the air to remind us, because our good friend Chris Carter said, you guys have to talk about the gear after you play the audio.
You know what? The problem is that we don't hear it, right? Because we put it in later.
Because we don't prepare.
That's why I have so much stage fright right now. Okay, so from now on, you send me the audio before.
Yeah.
And I'll listen to it. And yeah, no, I think we should. I mean, there have been times where I tried to fake it. I was like, that was fat. But I have no idea what it sounded like until the next day in the shower when I listen to the podcast on Friday morning. And I'm like, well, that really was pretty fat. It's a great sounding drum set. That was not a lie. That is a good sounding drum set.
So we will start next week. Yeah. So thanks, Chris. We'll try to make that happen. So our first question comes from Tyler. This is something I don't know if actually we will be able to really answer accurately, but we can try. What was the reason that drum companies switched from 3-ply shells to thicker 6-ply and up?
Wow, I would actually love to call Gretsch and like actual Gretsch in South Carolina and talk to them about that, because they were the pioneers of the 3-ply shell. So you would think they'd want to stick with that as long as they could. My broadcaster is a 3-ply shell.
I don't know if it was cheaper. Ludwig or Gretsch who did the first straight shell with no reinforcement rings. It was one of the two. It might have been Ludwig.
Mm. Okay,
my theory, which I think has been relayed to me, I might be misremembering, was it was when, as music got louder and more aggressive and people needed more durable and louder drums, they got, you know, they started using more plies because it just made the drums sound bigger, louder.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
But that's my hypothesis, and I believe that was told to me by some people over the years.
So you think it's a sonic thing, not a construction thing? It's easier to make a 6-ply shell.
It's easier to make them. They're going to be stronger because you got more wood. You know, they're not going to blow apart, and they're going to be louder because they're going to be a thicker shell.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
that's my philosophy on that. And please correct me. MDinfo@moderndrummer.com.
Stick that in your craw.
Call me out on it. All right, next one is from John in Annapolis. He's curious as to our thoughts on the order of things to bring in to a gig and then set up in the shortest amount of time. He always thinks about going from the ground up, but what order do we set things up?
I can tell you my setup's pretty easy. I set up all the hardware on its own away from the drum set. So there's like this batch of stands. But when it's time to assemble my kit, it goes kick, snare, hi-hat, floor, rack, cymbals.
Yeah.
But it always starts with the kick. Kick and snare gets me like kind of in my position. My hi-hat sets up my second pedal, and now I'm in groove position, everything's good. I match my floor tom to my snare drum exactly, same height, same angle, same everything, equidistant from the bass drum pedal. Rack tom, goes right in front of the snare, and then I bring in my cymbals, and then I season to taste.
That's pretty much exactly it. The only time I deviate from that is if I just have to get everything, like the drums, on stage first for the microphones. then the last thing I do will be the hi-hat.
I'm just thinking it'd be so awesome to have the opening band and the guy like just sets up an 8-inch splash by itself and then builds the whole kit around that one thing. And he's like, no, that's just got to be there. That's got to be there. Yeah, well, and then it's like,
I mean, do you know the band Battles?
Of course.
And he's got that. He puts his one crash like literally 8 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
I've not seen him set up. I wonder if that's first or last. If they make it like a
same thing with Blackwell's China.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, do you start with that? Like, you start with that. All right. There we go. Next.
All right. So where are we at here? This is an interesting one. This is from Big Al. So, in what situations would it be best to use hot rods, mallets, brushes, etc., as opposed to drumsticks?
Well, according to Mr. Dawson, there's no situation to ever use hot rods. I'm never going to let that go.
No, not true. Not true. Don't misquote me with your false facts.
All right. So, I don't want to mess with you because I know you're still a little tense about the Adler wood, the Lamb of God ply.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, D-Drum.
So I think the sound dictates everything for me. I don't really honestly see it as a volume thing to me. If I need to play quiet and I want it to be done with sticks, I choke up, I grab my maple sticks, and I just hit softer, you know? for me, brushes, mallets, and hot rods or bundle sticks, they're more of a tone than they are a volume to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a difference in tone. Because to me, I mean, hot rods are not quiet drumsticks. They are a totally different animal.
Yeah. You can play pretty loud with them.
Yeah, of course. You can rimshot those things.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually genre specific. Like, okay. I wouldn't... I think singer-songwriter kind of world is where you can really explore, because in general, you're playing like basic beats all the time. And if you only use sticks and you only use your simple four-piece kit, you're just going to be repeating yourself all night long. So
right.
you got to find something to mix it up. So maybe use a mallet in your left hand and a brush in the right hand, but still play your same beats. But how are you going to orchestrate those beats with these new implements? Because you can't really play the hi-hat with a brush because it's kind of silent pretty much. So maybe you're going to ride on the rack tom or something. Or put a maraca in your hand at the same time.
Mm.
So I think that's kind of the thing. It's genre. Like rock and roll, in general, it's just use the sticks. Like, just deal with it. If you got to play quietly, don't use hot rods if you're playing Led Zeppelin. It's just my philosophy. Right. Like, just don't do that because it's not the sound.
I'm with you. I mean, exactly. It's sound. Volume, I'll just play quieter, you know, or I'll play louder. but, I mean, and even if it was a loud thing, like you said, but I wanted the tonality of bundle sticks, I would just hit them harder. So now, one thing that I think is way underused, and I love when I see people do it. Jameson Ross did it on that video that we used as a pick of the week a while ago.
Yeah.
Do you play your drum set with mallets?
I do a lot.
I mean, I think that's such a cool thing.
I do a lot. It puts me in a melodic space immediately.
Right.
You're getting so much.
Do you turn
tone.
Your snares off always, or do you leave them on?
It just depends.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't. Okay. I mean, I like the sound of like loosening the wires so they really rattle, and then hit it with a mallet. It's just a cool, like, reverbed out kind of. It has like a distortion to it. There's no attack. So it sounds distant. I like that sound. Like, if you're going for a real moody vibe. But if I'm just messing around, like playing like solo type stuff, I'll usually turn the snares off. Use it like a tom.
Yeah, man. It's a fun thing too. And they fly off the drums. So you just feel.
Yeah.
I mean, a double stroke roll with mallets around the kit.
It's so smooth.
Like a stud. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cool. Next.
All right. Last one. This is from Curtis. Okay. I think we might have touched on this topic a little bit, but I wonder if you guys could discuss education options for four-year colleges versus something like Musicians Institute or the Collective. So he doesn't have a – I don't have a career, and I've been thinking about working towards getting a business degree as a fail-safe plan with a second degree or minor in music performance. So he's just wondering what would be our thoughts on the pros and cons of either going to a regular four-year program or one of these more selective two-year or summer programs?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have great examples of accomplished musicians that have done every choice. So there is no one path. For me, it's always been a simple thing of the reason to go to a Berklee, a Musicians Institute, a New School, any intensive place for music is mostly for the connections.
Yeah.
That can't be built just by hanging out at the right club at the right time. I mean, this is like, it's what happens when you get stuck in a combo with that bass player and that piano player, and you guys have a winter concert coming up. It bonds you in a totally different way that can't be done by just meeting somebody at a chance meeting. So I think the lifetime of connections you would get out of a two-year school like that, or an intense school like that, are amazing. The education's going to be fantastic, but you and I have talked a ton of times about you could just find whoever teaches at Berklee also does private lessons on the side probably. So you can get that education really wherever. It's just those connections are really impossible to find.
Yeah, there's no way to replace the, you know, like four or five of your friends who are in the same classes, staying up all night working on the same stuff, and who can play that thing better than the other guy. I mean, it's...
You were in the musical trenches together.
Yeah.
You know, it bonds you for life.
I mean, in his particular case, he's saying he's leaning towards getting a business degree, then, okay, game over. Go to a college that has a world-class business program and then get some music study outside of that. Because your business degree is going to come in handy in every – I mean, I should have done business school. I think everyone who's going to be self-employed as a musician needs to study some business. Yep. I mean, I'm backtracking like business 101 stuff now. Like, how do I even keep track of invoices and things like that?
Right.
So I would say find your business school first. And then either study music there or find the best local teacher or whatever scene you, or minor in music, whatever the option is. But
yeah,
that would be my suggestion.
Not to mention, you're not going to be able to get a degree in business without going through some serious marketing classes, which are going to help you as a musician for the rest of your
life.
Exactly. So, and William Patterson is one of those great schools that has, it's a fantastic school in New Jersey that just happens to have a world-class music program. So. Yep. You can find both. All right. It is time for Picks of the Week. By the way, guys, thanks for all of your questions. You can keep sending those in to mdinfo@moderndrummer.com. It only took me 78 episodes to memorize that, but I got it down. And we love your questions. You're always encouraged as well to send us audio questions. We love hearing your voice, too. Indeed. All right. It is time for our Picks of the Week. Do you have one or do you want me to go?
I got one. I took a handful of sticks with me on this run to just, sticks I'd never used before because I'm always, I like to try different, whatever I've got. And it just so happened at NAMM, I got a bunch of samples from different companies to try out. One in particular I'm not going to name tore my thumb to shreds. And it was...
So you're not even going to help our poor students, our listeners out?
I'm going to caution you on the type of stick. So it was a type of stick that has like the rubber gripper stuff on it where they dip it.
Yep.
And basically every company has them now, so I'm not throwing anyone under the bus. I'm pretty sure those sticks are really only effective if you wear gloves because...
Or
if you have dry hands. I have sweaty hands.
Love it.
So what happened was as my thumb got sweaty, it bonded with that rubber.
Literally,
so halfway through the set, I looked down. I'm like, why is there glue all over my thumb? It wasn't glue. It was my skin being ripped off of my thumb.
It was terrible.
So anyway, those are not my pick. My pick are...
Okay.
So just be aware if you're considering any kind of grip sticks, just if you have sweaty hands, I wouldn't go there.
Well, and be aware that when you come to drum camp, I snap your sticks over my leg if you have dipsticks.
There's nothing wrong with them. They felt great. I mean, they really did.
Until
they ripped my thumb off, yeah.
All right, yeah. Okay. Agree to disagree. All right, go ahead. It's your pick.
But another pair I got was from a Canadian drummer. He's, I see him every year at NAMM. He's a sweet guy. Michele. I don't know how you properly pronounce his name, but he's a Vader artist, and they debuted his...
Yeah, I went to dinner with him.
Yeah.
He's like the nicest guy ever.
Sweet,
he's a stud.
He's very supportive. You would never think that, just meeting him, like, he's a cool guy, but he's also a really badass world-class drummer
like,
at the same time.
Yeah.
So anyway, his signature stick from Vader is the AM-595, and it's right between a 5A and a 5B, and it felt just perfect to me. Like, you look at it, it's like, oh, it's a drumstick, whatever. But it had the perfect weight, perfect rebound. I think it's, standard 16 inches long. It has an acorn tip.
Yep.
It sounded great. It lasted 3 shows. It didn't break at all. So it's still in near perfect condition. So it was durable, as most Vader sticks are. But if you're kind of like me, where sometimes you want a 5B, but that can be too big, or a 5A could be too skinny, it's kind of right in that middle, where it just felt perfect. So that's my pick. It's the Vader AM-595.
Nice, man. Well, yeah, and you guys should definitely check him out. His name's Anthony Michele, and literally that's the website, just Anthony, MICHELLI.com. I had never met him either. I mean, I'd seen a little bit of his stuff and was a fan, but met him. We had a Vader dinner together, so it was myself, Anthony, and Abe Cunningham from the Deftones.
Yep.
And it was a great group of guys, man. We had a lot of fun. Yeah. So he's a monster for sure. My pick of the week this time is a person that I just want to alert you to, a drummer that you may not have seen yet. His name is Dan, I believe, Mayo, M-A-Y-O.
Oh, yeah. That guy's a beast.
Let's welcome in Israel to the drumming scene because, damn, I don't know what's going on over there,
he's
but this
going
cat
for
can
it.
Play.
Yeah.
Woo.
Brutal.
So, I freaked out over him, man. He's incredible. He grooves as hard as you would want a Steve Jordan alum to groove, but he throws in all the fusion and fun that make it YouTubeable, right?
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, unless you're really, really into the nuances of groove, watching some dude groove for 2 minutes is not... It's not going to do it for you. So, but he finds the balance, man. It's not showing off, and he just has so much life on the instrument.
Yeah.
Check out Dan. I think it's Mayo, but he's just absolutely incredible. I mean, you know me really well. I'm not much of a fanboy to many things. I reached out on Facebook and just wrote like a fan letter.
Oh, cool.
It wasn't like, my name's Mike Johnson. I have mikeslessons.com. it was just like, hey, what's up, man? I just want to let you know that your playing is absolutely inspirational. And I've been practicing all day after watching your video. Thanks for the inspiration.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know enough. I don't know enough is drummers from Israel to be have an honest assessment. But the guys that I know that come from that scene, they play with, I mean, no holds barred. They go for it. Like Near Z is one. Dan Near, is, I mean, they're going for like, they've got something to prove when they play the drums. Yeah.
It's pretty awesome, man. I mean, it's really quite impressive. And So check out Dan Mayo. And
what is his band called? Because they're really, really cool. What the heck are they called? Let's look it up.
I don't know.
It's kind of in that experimental rock, like fusion world. Tatran, T-A-T-R-A-N.
Yeah.
Tatran. I mean,
Tatran.
I don't know. Whatever.
Adler.
It's kind of like a JoJo Mayer thing, but with a little bit more of an attitude, I think.
Yeah, it's just great, man. It's just a constant reminder that there's room for all of us. When you think like, it's done. What else can we do after Weckl and Gad and Benny? It's like, there's room. There's always room for your version of expression on this instrument. So just stick with it, you know. But yeah, you can go to facebook.com/TatronMusic to check out his band as well. So very cool stuff. So all right, buddy. Well, that might be a record for us. How did we do today? We drop in almost 110. It's not bad.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I'll be able to edit out the Adler chunks.
No. No, you got to show people that even when it comes to writing, you're still human. People think that you're like, you know.
I own up to it. I screwed up. But you know what? Stuff happens.
You know what? Hey, I guarantee if you wait another 50 years, botanists will discover the Adler tree. And you'll be spot on, buddy.
Don't worry about it. In so many ways. I'll have to tell you all.
I know, right? All right, everybody. Have a fantastic week. We will see you guys next time. Mr. Dawson, take it easy, bud.
Adios.
Spanish for the kids.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.